No one thinks that they're ever going to have a problem knowing what to do with the money when they have it. They might even be looking at this podcast in this episode and saying that's first world problems. It's like, there's a reason why, right? Like, you can look at some of these articles around people earning $100,000, $250,000 and living paycheck to paycheck and look at those people and say, that's shameful. I will never be in that situation. Or you can say, man, what is happens? Money that complicated?
Yeah.
Are things that complex as to why?
Regular podcast where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. And today we're talking about how to manage a windfall.
Yes.
When that sudden rush or flood of money comes in.
Yeah.
And you're feeling yourself and you don't really know what to
do. Oh, man.
It's tax season. It is apparently crypto summer.
Oh,
we've
man.
Come out of crypto winter. So it is officially crypto summer. And I know a lot of people are feeling themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They are excited.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no offense to those who might not be experiencing that warmth. But for those of us who are, especially if you've not done this before, there is something that you should know. There are several things that you should know about how to deal with these times that seem so great. Stocks are going crazy. So I feel like a lot of people are feeling really, really good, especially those who have been invested, especially if you're kind of new to it all and you're just like being hit with a sudden rush. And so we wanted to spend some time talking about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of dreams of like the crypto pop off or the Powerball billions.
Yeah.
Or, you know, these big unexpected windfalls. But there are actually several smaller milestones throughout your life that you get, you know, this unexpected amount of money. It
yeah.
could be a severance payment. It could be, you know, selling your house. Housing prices have been way up. So
yeah.
it could be that you sold your house. It could be a bonus, a signing bonus. It could just be a number of things. Life insurance policies.
Yeah, I was going to say life insurance. Yeah.
There's a number of times where you just get hit with this money. And, you know, as business owners and investors, we've actually experienced windfalls quite a bit in mm-hmm. our life. That's not a humble brag. That's just, you know, when you're off the rhythm of an every other week paycheck, the money flows differently.
What's the and opposite of a windfall?
A shortfall?
A shortfall?
A rainfall?
Because I was going to say, right, like we've had a fair share of situations where you got to cut a big check. And that's a completely different
yeah.
experience that we can talk about at a later date. But I just wanted to add some context. So, yes, we've had that experience. We've experienced it on both sides, bull markets and bears.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And so I felt like this would be a good topic to explore, a good opportunity to share what we've learned. And we'll try not to lecture y'all. We're not going to say, like, save it all for a rainy day. I mean, we are going to say that, obviously. But we're not going to pretend like we just, you know, never splurged.
Yeah.
We were actually interviewed by our friends. I call them friends. Our online colleagues, our peers, Heather and Doug Bonaparte.
Yeah.
And they were asking what we would do if we got $1 million just all of a sudden. Do you remember what you said?
You know what's interesting about that? Before I answer that question, that popped up in my Facebook memories. We asked that question like maybe 4 years ago, and I combed through the answers to that question, which was actually fascinating. To answer your question, I remember when they asked it. I have no idea what I said. I have a general idea because I know that it would have been different from what I said 5 years ago. I know for a fact 5 years ago I would have had a greater interest in diversifying those investments. I think I would have been way more interested in commercial real estate and kind of breaking that up a little bit.
Yeah.
And now I think I've got a simpler approach where it's really just a matter of putting it into investing. I'm pretty sure I would have said I'd carve out maybe 100,000, maybe 150, just to kind of improve quality of life, like solve some around the house day-to-day nuisances or stuff like that, wardrobe, travel, things like that. But for the most part, I would not go on some massive splurge. It'd really
yeah.
just be a matter of making a little bit of problems go away and then ensuring that like the wildest dreams do come true
yeah.
like 10 to 15 years from now. So pretty boring stuff.
Yeah, it was your standard like
okay.
hardworking Caribbean answer. It
okay,
was like,
good.
First thing I do is pay off this house. And then I
yeah.
would, no, I think you said first thing I would do is take, you know, a percentage off for taxes. Then I pay off the house.
Yeah.
And then I think you said you would put the rest in like index funds, to your point, blow a little money fast.
Blow a little money. Yeah. Plant a couple seeds. Nothing crazy.
Yeah. Nothing crazy. No, like, I'm buying Bitcoin with it. Like, none of that.
No, that just doesn't really interest me. I mean, I would probably sprinkle a little bit there just because, you know, I've been thinking a good bit about 2010 and some of the things that I would have done differently, certain trips that I would not have made as I've been exploring and revisiting this crypto boom. And so, I was like, I'm not going to make that mistake again. I'd sprinkle a couple thousand on a couple coins.
You weren't in the same place in 2010. It would have been very risky.
It would have been.
You definitely would have sold.
What if I got a million? It's not that big of a deal. Okay. I want to stay on track here a little bit. I want to go back in time because I do think it's important to contextualize a little bit of what we've been through just to kind of give people an example of this. So, yes, we have had our own experiences with these windfalls. Our close circles, like I remember, for example, when my mother sold her house, that was probably the biggest windfall she's ever had. That was a bittersweet one because she loved her home. She loved that neighborhood. She had to liquidate it. But it was admittedly the first time that she'd ever had that much money in cash ever in her life. So she really didn't know what to do with this. I mean, she literally said it. I have it on video. It was the happiest day of my life, which as her only son felt a little weird to hear. But I was like, wow.
Well, that's what windfall will make you do.
Windfall will make you say, look, I believe.
Every other day did not matter before this one.
It was crazy. I can think back very clearly to some of those first days as we were climbing the corporate ladder and getting those big bonuses. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, wow.
Yeah.
Like there's another check that's just coming in. I remember.
Yeah, it was like 10 grand.
Playing music in the house.
You know, just, and when we first started, it was like $4,000 to $7,000. Oh, yeah. And it was still just a lot of money because you got it with your paycheck. So, you know,
In addition, the check would drop on your regular check would drop on Thursday. And then on Friday, this little bonus check would drop in. And it felt like I can go anywhere in the world, do whatever I want to do. This was like the good days. I remember there were days when we were like particularly surgical about managing our portfolio and our budgets and like literally checking net worth every single day. Like you kind of go through this phase. We are not that anymore. It's just, it is what it is. But I remember those days and I specifically remember there being several periods, which we're probably getting ready to go through again, where you've got these periods where it's like a $10,000 like improvement in a day, right? This was like 2015, 2016, somewhere around those ballpark. So all of that to say between as entrepreneurs, like signing big deals and it's like, whoa, like I can't believe you used to have to work 3 months for this. You used to have to work half a year to get this kind of money. And then things go dry and then it goes back. I remember selling our property and so on. So I just wanted to share that to contextualize it because I think it comes in a variety of ways.
It does. There's definitely levels.
A variety of ways. Yeah. And we can talk about some of the other ways that you can kind of experience those things. But I just want to kind of put that out there because I do think it matters to help people understand that there's a difference in terms of how it comes, like whether it's a bonus, whether it's because you took a creative risk, whether it's because you took a big risk 10 years ago and it's finally paying off. Like they all kind of hit differently. They all feel great. Mm-hmm. But I think the feeling is still generally the same. Like it don't matter where it came from. Yeah. It just feels really, really cool.
Yeah, you're right. Sometimes it's just a cushion and sometimes it's life-changing money. And either way, it changes your brain a little bit, especially if you are a traditional employee who is used to the same amount of money coming in every other week, just divvied up over and over again over a 20-year period or however old you are, however long you've been working.
Yeah.
I remember when we sold our debt-free rental property. And we had, you know, over $150,000, $200,000 just like in our checking account, just chilling out there. And at the time, we had been living in this house for like maybe 18 months, year and a half. And so there were a lot of empty rooms.
Yeah.
Like
basement was finished.
It was finished.
But it was undone.
Yeah. That's like, exactly it.
There was nothing there.
Because we upgraded. Like we moved from a smaller place here. And, you know, when you upgrade your house, like it takes a minute to furnish it. And so we had all this money and I figured that was my chance to ball out. Now, I had a budget, but at the same time, like it was going fast. I was just buying everything that I saw, not thinking about, you know, how it fit into the overall decor. I bought chairs, tables, desks, beds, you name it, I bought it. And I am not an interior designer. You know, a lot of that stuff has worked out, but a lot of it has not. It has been donated, you know, lives with other people now, or we just flat out don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
And so I say all that to say, like, the natural reaction when you have all of this money, a bunch of extra unexpected money, is to start crossing things off of your wish list. Like, you immediately go to the list of all the things that you've ever wanted, yep, but couldn't necessarily afford for whatever reason. Yep. And if you can learn to resist that feeling, you're far more likely to actually reap the benefits of a windfall and less likely to experience financial regret or buyer's remorse or any of those negative emotions. So be like me, but don't be like
me. I was going to say, you could end the podcast right there. Not only was there a clear recorded admission of guilt, which just makes me feel great as a husband. But you're absolutely right. I will say this. I have a slight disagreement or a different point of view in terms of how you're saying it. Because I don't know that you really want to approach getting a windfall with, like, this standpoint of wanting to avoid financial regret. I do think you owe it to yourself, to your point, to splurge a little bit. Because I feel like it's important to kind of get it out of your system. Like, you actually, I think there's a lot of value in splurging and not necessarily regretting,
right,
but, like, thinking twice about it. That's really, like, wisdom,
yeah,
in a way. Because if you don't have that feeling and instead you just have the feeling of saying, oh, well, I had a budget and I was reasonable when I splurged. Well, then the next time that windfall comes, now you're trying to beat it, especially if the windfall is greater than it was before. So I think having that balance, that yin and that yang there, is really important. One of the things that we did do for sure and have always done is to ensure that we aren't just splurging on things.
Yeah.
It was making sure that we also, like, treated ourselves to a wider variety of things. So we're saying, and that sounds, I didn't word that correctly, but experiences. And so there's buying something, like upgrading and finally getting the kind of mattress and the sheets that you want. And then there's going to the place that was kind of far out on the list that you never thought that you would quite get there. But now you scratch that itch and you feel like, wow, what am I doing in Thailand or in Koh Samui for a week?
Yeah.
This is really, really cool. Or what am I doing in St. Martin at, like, a boutique, you know, nice restaurant that I kind of feel like I have the whole place to myself.
Yeah.
We've had all of those kinds of experiences. Some of them have been great. Some of them have just been okay. And you can say, all right, don't know that I want to do that again. But I do think that there's this value in not just saying, hey, I'm going to buy whatever I want. Mix it up a little bit, you know, give a little bit more. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Buy some things, improve some things, solve some problems. I think that is one of the, like, first big lessons. I know we're not breaking it up in terms of, like, numbers, but that is certainly something that I would say is worthy of consideration. Like, making sure that you've got a combination of things you want, problems you want to solve, just good old giving that just, like, really, really feels good and, like, will be beneficial to you 10 years from now and so on. Like, mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, we definitely use our money to try some shit. Like, you know, there is some things that I remember I used to work for a VP who invited us over to his house for the annual Christmas party. Uh-huh. And his house wine was, like, my favorite special occasion wine.
Yeah.
Like, it's Stag's Leap, y'all, which is a delicious wine.
He was like,
but it's like $60 a bottle.
Yeah.
And that's what he was serving, like, his team. There was like 100 of us.
Yeah. And typically, just to kind of put that in the context, right? That's like, you know, whatever it is, maybe it's liquor or something like that, Patron, I don't know, whatever your favorite top shelf thing is. But, like, if you're having a party, you got one bottle of that, and then you've got, like, a couple bottles. You know, the people that stay
late
afterwards.
Open the good
late.
Shit.
He was like, all right, now that everybody's gone, let's open up the good stuff. That was just the bar.
He's that, like, was the bar.
He's
like, no, he's like, this is my favorite wine.
Yeah.
This is what I drink. And so this is what everybody drinks. And I remember thinking, like, man, how much money do you have to have for that to be your baseline?
Your bar. Yeah.
And so for a couple years when we would get our corporate bonus, we would just go buy really nice wines.
Yes.
Like the kind of wines that are $300 and $400 in a restaurant, but are, you know, priced reasonably in a store if you buy it directly.
Yeah.
And so we had a case of really great wine for, like, you know, a couple months, and we would just, every time we opened it, it's like, oh, okay.
This on a is Tuesday.
This is what wine.
Just, and we'd a eat random
it.
Tuesday.
Drink it with, like, pizza, sub sandwiches. Like, it was true, rich, and regular shit. Like, it was a great time. And so, Yeah, definitely use your money to have some fun. I think the second thing that I would add to that is just to resist the urge to do anything too quickly. Like, yes, especially if the windfall is something like a life insurance payout, like, you know, the proceeds from the death of a loved one or a severance from the loss of a job, anything that has some sort of weight to it, I would especially wait. But if it's not, even if it's just fun money, like, just don't move too quickly. And the reason for that is because money is so emotional. Your mind can react differently based on the nature or the type of windfall that it is.
Yeah.
If it's something like an annual bonus, something that you've been going in that office for every day for a year, you've worked hard, you've earned it, you've probably been expecting it. And so you can do a better job of attaching it to a larger cause, a bigger goal or whatever it is.
Yeah.
If it's unexpected, like a layoff or an inheritance, it may cause you to short circuit a little bit and then just kind of like blow it fast just because you're trying to recover from a feeling.
Yeah.
There's a Haley and Justin, The Price of Avocado Toast. Their story is that they blew through like $600,000 in 6 months or something.
Oh, wow.
Ridiculous. I mean, no shade to them. I love them. They're great. But they tell this story because, you know, here they are teaching people, coaching people about personal finance, but they have this story of like windfall money. Maybe we should have them on the podcast.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah. But yeah, I would just say resist the urge to do anything too quickly.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's not exactly the same. I don't have my own version of a $600,000 blow. That was in a year.
I can't remember the timeline, but it was really short.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't have my own version of that. But in terms of like the importance of waiting a little bit, that's something I do have a little bit of experience. And this is like on the other end of the spectrum in terms of like blowing $600,000. But another example of a windfall might be a random class action lawsuit thing forgot.
The little $4 checks.
Well, I got one for, it wasn't a class action lawsuit. It was, unclaimed property,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought was a scam a little bit. I had to Google it. I didn't know what it was, but basically it had something to do with a real estate transaction that we had done a couple of years ago. Apparently I was owed a refund. They sent it to one address, didn't get it. The check was never cashed, and so I ended up getting a check for like $190 or something like that, which I was like, all right, I like receiving checks for $190 that I wasn't expecting.
Chicks or checks?
Checks. But, you know, I've got a list of things that I want. I've got a list of things that I need. I got a list of things that, like, I want, but I'm kind of just keeping my eye on.
Yeah.
And, you know, to your point, if you just pull the trigger and you say, you know, I'm going to get whatever, you end up realizing, man, I probably should have just waited an extra day.
Mm-hmm.
And then just...
And I would have remembered.
Yeah.
I want a new grill thermometer.
Because that's the thing. That's the thing. You end up blowing it on the first thing that's top of mind if you don't have a system. So that's what I think is one of the first tips around or benefits of waiting is creating a system. Create and document that wish list,
mm-hmm.
maybe even categorize that wish list by price range or whatever it is. Because I think a lot of people think they have it in their head,
mm-hmm.
but it's not until you see the thing and it was like, oh man, I did want that. That would have been the perfect use for the $250 or the $1,000 or whatever it is instead of the first thing that came to mind.
And not to mention in a world of digital advertising, like you're being swayed all the time and new ideas are being forced in front of you on your timeline. And so even if you have what you want in your mind, you might log on and learn like, oh, you know, Rihanna has a new lip shade or apparently such and such is on tour now. And now all of a sudden you're distracted versus the thing that you've been wanting and planning for.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So that's, you know, the $250 example. But if we're talking about like $50,000 or, you know, it doesn't really matter, but like a larger amount of money, there's even more of a reason or a rationale to like take your time and stop and think about it. The first one is because you want to think about whether or not you need to tell your loved ones and how you tell your loved ones. I know that they're, again, you're feeling excited. You feel like, oh my gosh, all the problems are going to be solved. And I will just say from personal experience, especially if you've had these kinds of deeply ambitious conversations with people. I've been there where I have a family member who I said, man, when I get put on, mm-hmm. I'm solving that problem for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get put on And it's like, everybody hope he doesn't.
Everybody
think,
got the handout.
Yeah, or I hope he don't remember that conversation because he remembers. She thinks that I can solve that problem, but I can, and I know it gets so complicated.
It does.
And so these are the kinds of things that you really, really want to be mindful of. So think about how you're going to communicate it, because there might be some people who remember something that they did for you or something that you said, and they're thinking now is the time where you're going to all of a sudden make all their problems go away. We mentioned it briefly in terms of the response to the question that we were asked, but it absolutely needs to be one of your top of mind questions, is to think about what the tax implications are, right?
Yeah.
Is that taxable income? What impact does that have on your marginal tax rate? You don't want to be blowing a bunch of money right now thinking you've got $10,000, $100,000, when really you should be thinking or assuming or spending as if you have closer to like 60 or 70, because like you just don't want to have that experience. Like that's a different lesson.
Listen.
To learn the hard way. And so
he's coming. Uncle Sam is coming for his money.
Yes.
And higher income typically equals a higher tax bill, but they don't take it off the top. You know, you gotta write that check.
Correct.
So to your point, it helps you to just think through like 60 to 70% of the money that you think you have is spendable. The rest is, you know, you got to pay the piper.
Yes, yes. A couple other things. One, and this is really going back to the idea of giving, it's okay to right size the amount of money that you want to give. And I think, you know, you may be telling yourself, and again, I've been there, you may be telling yourself that if I ever make X amount of money, I'm going to give at least such and such. Pump the brakes a little bit, right? Give yourself an opportunity to actually experience that windfall before you start saying those things. Because I'm telling you, you don't want to be in a situation where now the money is there. People are expecting you to give. You made a promise before it even came. And now here you are thinking twice about it. The same is true in reverse, where you have a lot of money and you feel like there is a chance for you to give above and beyond what is expected. So let's say there's an organization that is used to $100 and you feel like, man, I could give $500 and it wouldn't be anything. And all it's okay to give $100.
Five times, or once, or twice.
Like, it's not a competition, but I've been there where I have also, I wouldn't call it a regret, but wish I hadn't given as much.
Yeah.
Because shortly after that, you come up with an experience and you start to question whether or not, all right, was that ego? Was that just like hubris? Like, what was that? Why did I feel so willing to give or to treat that money a little more loosely than I should have? So I think that's something that a lot of people really should be.
But there's also the other side of that coin where there is, this has been studied a couple of times, and if I find it, I'll link it in the show notes, but nonprofits also struggle with windfalls.
Yeah.
And so there have been stories where someone wins the lottery, they tithe 10% all at once to their church or to whatever belief system they have. And when that church or that organization gets $250,000 at once, they start to scramble. They start to not use these same tactics, and you feel like you somehow like accelerated the decline unintentionally because they're not ready for that amount of money. And it's, again, it's a very personal decision. There are some organizations that absolutely know what to do with a $500,000 grant. They've actually studied this. This came up because of Mackenzie Bezos. Well, that's not her last name, but Jeff Bezos' ex-wife,
Mackenzie,
has been donating her billions. And there's a lot of billionaires that are going to do the same thing. They plan to give their money away. And when you get it as a recipient, as a nonprofit, if you don't have a strategy in place because you were never expecting it, then that money just doesn't go towards the cause.
Correct.
Or, you know, the way it uses it the way it's supposed to. And so it's come up a lot. And it's something that we need to think about. Should you get a windfall and want to bless somebody or something in a meaningful way?
That's such an important point, because it's one of those things where you're right. I don't believe people think that they're going to have that problem.
Right.
Right. Like, no one thinks that they're ever going to have a problem knowing what to do with the money when they have it. They might even be looking at this podcast in this episode and saying it's first world problems. I was like, there's a reason why, right? Like, you can look at some of these articles around people earning $100,000, $250,000 and living paycheck to paycheck and look at those people and say, that's shameful. I will never be in that situation. Or you can say, man, money that complicated?
Yeah.
Are things that complex as to why certain people may not exactly know what to do? And so all of that to say, I think especially when we're talking about large lump sums, because there are long-term implications, instead of being judgmental and certainly instead of being naive, It actually just means you've got more decisions to make, mm-hmm. right? You've got a combination of things, no different than a philanthropist, to say, hey, how do I want to affect positive change in the world? What's going to be the best use of that money? Same is going to be true for you. Am I going to solve problems today? Am I going to solve problems tomorrow? Am I going to accept that problems will always exist and not even try to solve them? How do I slice that up? Like, those are very important decisions to make. You can use data. You can use personal character assessments of other people, other external factors, but it is complicated. It's never as simple as just, I'm going to do whatever I want to do and it's not going to matter. If you're a human being, you understand that things can be a little bit more complicated. And mm-hmm. so, again, this is less about receiving a $190 check and more so when those thousands of dollars, tens or hundred thousands of dollars come in, there should be some thought mm-hmm. to what you do with it. And I think it helps to think about those things in advance so that when that day comes, you know exactly what to do.
You know, the other thing about having windfall is that it develops a different financial muscle in your brain. When you have a lump sum, you're able to think long term more often. It's almost like your IQ raises. But there's been a lot of studies on just the decision fatigue that people who experience poverty have because of the inability to think long term.
Yeah.
When you don't know where you're going to live.
Experience.
Yeah. When you don't know where your next meal is coming from, when you don't know where you're going to live in the next 3 months, you are constantly making decisions. And when you have this lump sum money and you know that your basics are covered, you're able to think long term. And so when you think about just spending, like even if we move away from the extreme of extreme poverty, when you think about your spending, how much of your spending is driven by this feeling of scarcity? Yeah. You're spending money you don't have and you're buying something you don't need because you think it's not going to be available to you anymore. You think you're never going to want anything else like this again.
Yeah.
And all of those decisions impact how quickly that money goes. When that's no longer a factor because you can presumably afford several things on your list, you can look at anything in any store and buy it because you've got the money sitting in your checking account, you can be far more intentional about the areas that you want to invest in, right? It's about going deeper instead of wider. You can think about all the chores that you have, to your point about what problems you want to solve in your life and in others. That's a muscle that is only developed when you have enough money to think like that.
Yeah.
You can try. You could definitely, that's what manifesting is, when you're imagining something that hasn't happened yet. But when it actually happens, the muscle changes. It's a different, it's almost like, I don't know enough about fitness and anatomy to say like what it goes to, but it's like a super drive.
Yeah. I'm thinking about it from a standpoint of startups that make a point to hire seasoned CEOs and seasoned CFOs, right? You don't really know what it's like to manage multiples of millions of budgets or any of those kinds of things because you're just a startup. And now all of a sudden you're doing well. You're kind of forced to do that. If you don't have that experience, it's really beneficial to have someone on your team that actually knows how to do it. So the same is true in your life. And I guess this is where a advisor, and I don't specifically mean a financial advisor, it could be a role model or someone who can play some type of advisory role to say, hey, what would you do if you were me? I just want to make sure I'm not missing anything and that I'm preparing myself for the future that I don't quite know how to predict.
Yeah.
It makes me think about the talk that we just did. We just did a really great boot camp in partnership with Dream Bank, which is a subsidiary of American Family Insurance, a couple weeks ago, it feels like, or maybe that was last week. And one of the examples that we were presenting to the people while we were talking about investing, just to kind of put the idea or the value of what a lump sum and the kinds of problems or issues it can solve, is we were breaking down like your standard investment of investing like $100, assuming it was compounding at 10%. If you'd done that over 40 years, you would have like somewhere in the ballpark of around $500,000. And then we presented it and said, hey, well, what if you did that same thing, but it was you and your partner? Mm-hmm. And if you did that, naturally you would double your money. But if you weren't starting at zero, right? Like if you were actually starting with a $10,000 initial lump sum, and then on top of that, you invested $100 and you and your partner did that, you would end up somewhere in the ballpark of $1.6 million at the same time.
You triple your money.
Which to me is so interesting, right? Because it's like, yeah, you understand it. Even if you struggle with understanding compounding interest and you say that example, you say, yeah, okay, well, that makes sense because the money compounds. But then when you think about how that $10,000 kind of head start basically creates a third person for you. Mm-hmm. It really helps to illustrate like the true power of compounding and like how a seed or a bag of seeds can turn into something far greater and basically replicate all of the money that you have been working for. And so when you think about it that way, and you think about the kinds of opportunities that you might have in these cases, I think it just helps to at least give yourself an opportunity to say, yes, you're okay. That's hard to wrap my head around. And maybe I shouldn't buy that expensive case of wine. Or maybe I don't have to jump immediately from what I'm accustomed to here. I'm willing to kind of meet somewhere in the middle so that I can ensure that I've got money working on my behalf for the days where I get tired, or so that you can give your child or someone else's child or any number of children a type of head start. I think that's the way that I would encourage a lot of people to think about these opportunities as they're flush with cash.
Yeah, I think it's one of the hardest sells about compounding interest is that it doesn't get sexy until you have a big balance. If you just have $100 compounding, it's very different than if you have $100,000 compounding. Right. Because as you continue to let it sit, it doubles in a quicker time period than it would just linearly.
Yeah.
And so if you let compounding interest do its magic, you start to drastically shorten your financial goals. You might have thought you had to work till you were 60, but then you put $50,000 in there when you're 40 and you realize like, oh, snap, at 52, I'm actually ready to go, right? And I think that's really hard to wrap your head around because compounding is so exponential and our brains just don't work like that. Plus, the same is true for debt. When it comes to debt, it's a hard sell to tell people how important it is to pay off when they are making small incremental payments and only seeing incremental progress. But if you think about the compounding impact of paying off your debt, you not only get a raise in the short term because your cash is no longer going towards this money that you've already spent, yep. You're also reducing your need for future income and you're taking the pressure off of your retirement savings. So an example, like if someone wants to pay off their mortgage and their mortgage was $2,300, that's $2,300 less than they need to spend in the future. Yep. That's $2,300 less than they need to account for when they're thinking about their retirement income. If we save for Bose College right now, I'm not picking jobs or careers for myself that allow me to set aside additional money for his college education because I've already saved for it. I've already invested for it. Not to mention, and I know this has been research heavy, but research shows that the psychological impact of making progress on a goal is almost more fulfilling, and in a lot of cases is more fulfilling than achieving the goal itself. And so even just that little brain boost of like making a chunk in your student loan payments or in your mortgage payment or whatever it is starts to feel good. And that's ultimately the real purpose of money, is like to create that sense of like freedom and progress and feeling in your life.
Yeah, I completely agree. Okay, we've spoken about large lump sums, what to do, how to think about it. We've spoken about mini lump sums and what to do with those. I think it also comes in a different form, which is when you get the big job, you get the big salary bump, right? It feels...
Or your side hustle takes off.
Or the side hustle all of a sudden kind of reaches the next level. Mm-hmm. It exceeds expectations and now it's producing the kind of income that you want. What do you do with that money? I think the way that you approach that is pretty similarly, but I can give perspective from my standpoint. And a lot of this, I think, comes from, one, just starting with tracking your expenses, right, in your budget, in terms of having clarity around how much you need in order to maintain your quality of life every single month. But I think so much of this starts with giving thought to what you would do if you have or when you have more money prior to having that money. Mm-hmm. And so if you're interviewing for those jobs, have a plan for what you're going to do with that extra money. It could be that, yes, when I get this job, I know that I'm going to have, let's say, an extra $1,000. And with that, I'm going to solve these problems, improve quality of life. You can do any number of those things. But I don't think people give enough thought. I know they think immediately, well, all my problems go away.
Right.
And that may not necessarily be true. Right? You need to have clarity around what you need to earn in order for whatever your problems are to actually go away. But I hear that all the time and people haven't given enough thought around what they're going to do. So for me, I remember it being little things like, yes, I'm going to renovate the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm going to buy the new car. Yes, or in my case, it was a new to me car. Yes, I'm going to go visit family because I haven't seen them in 5 years. And you can kind of break it up and say, well, in the spring, this is what I'm going to do. That's going to cost me $1,000. And in the summer, this is what I'm going to do. But these are some of the things that I'm going to do that ensure that there's a greater long-term quality of life component to the way that I'm dividing up this money. How you slice that up is completely up to you. But I think the way that you handle those situations is dependent on the pre-work around having clarity around what your budget is and then what you would do if you have or put yourself in a position where you could earn more.
I think part of that thought process, the pre-work, as you call it, part of that is also thinking about what type of expert resources you may need.
Yeah.
I think people naturally assume when they get a windfall money that they automatically need a financial advisor, a wealth manager, a person to tell them what to do with their money.
It's like a part of growing up.
Yes, it's a cultural
tick. I'm a real professional
like,
now.
Oh, I got money now. I need it. I need somebody to tell me what to do.
Tell me what to do.
And I know that I'm biased as a DIY investor. I personally don't think you need to focus on investing advice unless it's like over $2 million windfall. Or unless it's like a year later after you've already gotten it. Now, I will say it's worth hiring a CPA for some tax advice and making sure that you are accounting for the tax implications of your situation. And I also think it's worth hiring an attorney that can help you with estate planning. Like, you're probably going to need a new will. You're probably going to need some sort of protections to make sure that your money isn't just out there floating loosey-goosey. And you'll probably need to update your insurances, right? Whether it's life insurance or other liability insurance. Those are the things that CPAs, attorneys can help you with at a very fair hourly rate. It's not no percentage of your wealth. It's not, you know, something that rides the tide with you. It's not putting you in any investments. It's just a matter of protecting what you have, which is a piece that people forget about.
Yeah, it's such an important point. I had a conversation with a friend of mine just the other day, and one of the things that he said before we jumped off is that he was going to call me. He was glad that I called him, and he was letting me know that he was going to call me back because he had been thinking about some things, and I think he was getting ready to come into some money, but he didn't trust anybody else, and he knew that I would tell him the truth or at least give him a point of view that he didn't really feel like anybody else would have because he doesn't share those kinds of details with anyone. And I think that's true for a lot of people, right? So I would treat this process, to your point around seeking professional help, I think that's a good idea. If you're not a real estate investor, you might not understand this example, but one of the key things that real estate investors do is they get multiple quotes, right? No different than if you're experiencing some type of health issue and you think about going to one doctor and getting a second opinion. This is exactly the time where you would want to do that as well. So if you speak to one CPA and you like it, it's totally fine for you to talk to another one or get another quote, especially if this is your first time, because you're just going to assume that this is how much it costs to meet with a lawyer, or this is how much it costs to get an estate plan done. You don't know that. Yeah, it's up to you. You can spend $400 or $5,000. Both of them are going to be willing to take your money.
Yeah.
Same thing with the CPA, same thing with the tax advisor, same thing with a wealth manager. And so I think it's important that people do that. Talk to people you know. If you don't know anyone, then ask if someone that you know knows someone. See if you can get in front of them. But there are plenty of fee-only advisors that you can reach out to that are, generally speaking, all reasonable, assuming they're fiduciaries.
Yes.
And they can give you a general understanding of what you should do in these situations if you're investing or just receiving this money and you don't really know what to do with it. Because I can tell you right now, certainly different from 5 years ago, there's more voices and more conflicting information on what to do or how to think about money and investing, I think, than ever before. And I think it's only going to get more challenging.
Absolutely.
So there's a benefit to there being more options available. But because of how most people's brains work and the difficulty that comes along with having all of these different options and experiencing decision fatigue and indecision, it just becomes overwhelming. And then you end up not doing anything. And then that just leads to you either missing out on an opportunity or making some type of impulse decision.
Yeah.
And so all of that to say, reach out to multiple people, right? Write it down, organize those things and say, why? Why is it that some people are saying I should do this? Other people are saying do this. Organize all of these options. And then think about what might be specific or unique to your life so that you end up making a decision that is customized for you,
yeah,
and not based on somebody else's life, somebody else's risk tolerance, or someone else's purpose for your money.
Yeah.
This is exactly what we mean when we say, if you don't have a purpose for somebody your income, somebody else will.
Child.
This is how it works. You show up and saying, I got a bunch of money. I don't really know what to do. Someone will say, oh, well, buy this.
Yeah.
Invest in this. Try this.
And, get you one of these.
And they will make you feel good about
they
it, too.
They sure will.
So, yeah.
Is there anybody you would hire, like any sort of expert advice that you would hire if you had windfall money?
Absolutely not.
Not even a therapist.
I was going to say tax advisor. I would get a therapist on retainer. Sure. But I'd look to consolidate. I was like, I need a therapist that can cut hair. Because I ain't got time to do both. So somebody that can cut hair and like a trainer. I need a trainer.
Right.
Barber, therapist.
Yeah.
That's what I'd be looking for.
Yeah. Is anybody out there?
Swiss Army knife of professionals. That's all I need.
You just need a best friend. That's all.
That too.
Well, I hope this helps somebody. I mean, the reason we are talking about this is because it's actually more common than anybody would think, especially if you work in tech or in any sort of career where you have equity. You could wake up and see that you have more money than you could have ever imagined.
Yeah.
And it's important to think through, you know, what you would do, even if you don't work for tech. If you're just the kind of person that struggles with whether you're going to have dinner with Jay-Z or take $500,000, listen to this episode again and take the money.
Yeah, think about that one. No, I'm kidding.
All right, y'all. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast. If you like what you heard, then let us know. Leave us a 5-star rating or review or drop a comment below and keep the conversation going. We will see y'all next week. If you like videos like this and want to see more, make sure you click subscribe and turn on notifications.